Before we start, I got to ask you a question about Homicide New York. Not if you finished it or if you liked it, but if I told you that one of those detectives, if they ever made a movie based on that series, would be played by Miss Jane Lynch.
Yes.
Am I right or am I right?
I know exactly the one you're talking about. Yep.
I mean, I loved her to death, for one. I think she rules, right?
It had color. It had life. It also had quite a bit of business for me, most unfortunately.
They got talking heads that have done this before. I mean, I know they're detectives in New York, but they all had good personalities. What do you think?
I liked seeing shots of her from back in the day, like crime scene video, and you see her in like the trench coat.
Yep.
And like the late 80s, early 90s hairstyle.
Yeah.
And she's like super serious on it.
Yeah.
That's Jane Lynch.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I used to eat for breakfast? Cocaine. You know what I used to eat for lunch? Cocaine.
Boom, let's close the lid on that. Let's tamp that right the hell down.
I'm Lester Holt.
Howdy, Holtheads. Kurt Money here, alongside my co-host,
Kate Lyon.
And we are here to discuss episode 25 of Dateline's 32nd season, The Sleepover. Now, hit you with the old IMDb, which actually has not been too bad for us lately. I think it's been doing okay.
Yeah, it's accurate.
All right, here we go. Navy petty officer and devoted mother, Sherry Malarick, is found shot to death in her minivan. After she disappeared, the case remains closed until new revelations and old memories resurface. All right, it's funny that I just said, IMDb, you're doing good, because
yeah, that sucked.
And I had to change the tense of like four words on the fly. Guess what, IMDb? You're back in the doghouse. Next week, we're going to KMDb.
Fair.
All right, so Caitlin, hit me with your thoughts. What'd you think? We had another AC episode.
We did, and I was a little surprised because this one was in Florida also.
Correct.
And typically the Florida ones are MRFs, but we had AC.
I'll be.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I was curious. This episode had topics that they both have claim on. And AC won.
Yes.
Here's Andrea Canning.
I liked this one a hell of a lot more than last week's, I know that.
Dateline, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you thought of this app?
That's what I think about it.
But I'm curious if we have the same feelings about the outcome.
Well, I guess we'll see. I have an opinion, but I'm not even sure myself, to be honest.
Same. Yeah. Maybe we have the same opinion.
All right. Yeah. Okay, so this all begins on the night of September 21st, 2001. Sherry and Greg Malarick, they have five kids together. Like Brady Bunch style, they each came in with some.
Blended.
They have a blended family, and they're having their cousins over for the first time. I don't know if it was like they had just moved in or something, but they specified it was the cousin's first time coming over.
First and last.
Yeah.
I'm ready when he is.
So the cousins are over. Around 7:30, Sherry steps out to go grab something from the Winn-Dixie. Or so we believe from her husband, Greg. He says that she took the minivan, gonna run to the store real quick to get some milk, and she'll be right back.
It's just kids being loud and playing.
Jacob was the oldest. His sister, Tara, the baby of the family.
And this was around 7 when they were sitting down for dinner when this happened. Hours passed, still no word from Sherry.
Jacob described how his mom went outside in the middle of dinner and didn't come back.
So now Greg's getting worried and he's calling family members, but he's not worried enough to wake the kids up because he's calling like brother-in-laws and he's like, no, don't worry. The kids are asleep. Don't come over.
I was like, I'll come get the kids. He's like, no, they're in bed.
He didn't want to worry the kids. He didn't want to worry the police either.
Okay. Why?
Because they didn't get called until the morning.
City Police, Jackie.
Hi, my name is Greg Miller. My wife is a little late getting back, and I was wondering if you had any kind of accident reports this evening.
Where would she be coming from?
I have no idea. She left, and she didn't say where she was going.
In the morning, he calls over the family. Nobody knows where Sherry is, so they go out to look for her. Okay, so yeah, the brother-in-law goes to the Winn-Dixie grocery store and sees a familiar ride in the parking lot. It is a red minivan that matches Sherry's. He goes over to the van, glances inside, and sees a slumped over body and calls the police. He's found Sherry.
She is slumped over in the passenger seat, like down. Someone pushed her down so that her body would be hidden from view.
And there was no doubt in my mind at that point that she was gone. I'm like, Sherry, what happened? military instinct kicked in.
Now, she is pushed at one, for one, Dateline. I'm sorry, what is this, season one of Forensic Files? Because there was no blur on that body, Caitline. They showed that dead body hunched up in the van. Not a blur in sight. How about that?
Well, you couldn't really see anything.
True, but they talked about the blood and she was shot in the head. But I'm just saying, you know, Dateline, they love to blur. They love to go overboard with the blurring. I was shocked to see it more than once. A dead body, not a lick of blur on it.
Have we talked about how Forensic Files just has full-on dead bodies completely visible?
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. It's only the early seasons. I mean, throughout its run, it shows more than Dateline and other stuff on like network. But those first few seasons, they're showing like blue bodies and, I mean, wild dead body stuff. Like gross dead body stuff.
You showed me that one where it was just like full frontal naked woman dead.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not like I said, Caitline, check this out. You got to look at this picture of this naked lady.
Sure, that makes you sound weird. You were like, yo, they don't blur. Check this out.
Yeah.
And it was not blurred.
It was true. It was not blurred, as promised. So we see her slumped over, and I can't tell. They were saying that it's, like you said, she's pushed down so that people can't see her.
But it's already suspicious, because why is she in the passenger seat?
That's my thing. Is her body in a position that she could have started in the driver's seat and was pushed over and down? Or was she in the passenger seat? I can't tell whether or not she started in the passenger or the driver's seat. I don't know.
The way they tell it, it seems like we're not supposed to know. And then by the end, we're supposed to think she was in the passenger seat the whole time.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was the position of the body that was most noteworthy to the detective.
Mm-hmm. Like you felt like someone had...
Oh, there's no doubt somebody pushed her down. The body's not normally crumbled like that.
To keep her out of sight?
Yes. Yeah, that was a concealment.
So they find her body right away. And here's the weird thing about it is, one, they find her parked kind of far away. And their theory is that if there was an available spot, she would have parked closer. But the biggest one is that they found at home in her dresser drawer her wallet and her purse and everything. So she ran this errand without her purse. Now look, if it's true that she just had to run to the store for milk, she might have thrown a few bucks in her pocket, I suppose. But this looks like pretty good proof that perhaps maybe she did not run an errand, that her dead body was removed pretending to run an errand. What do you think?
As a lady.
Yep. Yep.
I find it hard to believe that she would not have just grabbed her purse.
Yeah.
Because it's got her driver's license. It's got all of her lady things. And you need those when you're gonna drive a car. I can see shoving a couple bucks in your pocket when you're just walking to the store really quick. But if you're gonna be driving, you need your wallet. And our wallets are too big to slip into our pants. We need our purses.
Yeah.
I don't think she drove there.
Okay, so how'd she get there then?
Well, I think that she got into an argument with her husband. He killed her, put her in the passenger seat, drove her to the Winn-Dixie, had his girlfriend pick him up there and take him back to the house. None the wiser.
Yeah. Wait, so that's what you believe and you want to know if I agree with that?
Yes.
I thought you would just assume that I'd say he's fucking guilty.
I think the girlfriend is too.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, you're right. Actually, you know what? We did not mention the girlfriend.
Rumor, Greg was having an affair with another woman named Jennifer.
Jennifer was Jennifer Spohn. She worked in the same building as Greg on the naval base. She was also the part-time babysitter who showed up with the lawnmower the night of the murder.
Around 9:30... At a point where Sherry Malerick is missing.
She should be back by now, but she's not.
She's not. Jennifer shows up at her house. Now, Jennifer babysits Greg's kids because Sherry had been on a year-long deployment to Greece. She wanted to do it all in one fell swoop so that she can come back and be with her family.
And like a typical dad, he couldn't take care of them by himself.
Of course.
Because
not.
Men can't be bothered to watch their own children.
To babysit their kids? No way.
No.
Was Nick a good father?
So good.
He looks them in the eyes.
He had a nanny who then became his girlfriend secretly.
Yes. So, and Jennifer, so that girlfriend, Jennifer, shows up 2 hours into Sherry not being there with a lawnmower and says, "Thanks for letting me borrow the lawnmower." I mean, she doesn't come in or anything. Greg comes outside to see her. So that's odd that his mistress shows up to return a lawnmower day of.
She was there to return a lawnmower she'd borrowed.
Jennifer left and it was, "Hey,
it's time to start getting ready for bed.
But, God, nobody asked if she mowed it that day. Because when she was telling the story on the stand, she said, well, I was done, so I took it back.
What did she say, though, as far as why she returned the lawnmower at that hour on a Friday night?
She felt she needed it back.
So just a coincidence.
Yeah.
So if she mowed that day and brought it over, that's not surprising to me then. What do you think?
It's not, but why did she wait so long to bring it back? She wasn't mowing it in the dark.
Okay, but wait, we don't know that because she came over around 9-ish. I mean, the sun went down at 8? I mean, I don't know, maybe she had to take a big dump first or something.
Okay, I guess I just assumed that she had mowed it that day. Did she not say that in her initial interrogation?
Nobody said it specifically because everybody's reaction was that day you decided to bring back a lawnmower. I felt like that was a necessary fact to have to be able to judge that. It's whether or not it was used that day. Like, I don't know. So that's one question.
Yeah. Did anyone check to see if her lawn was actually freshly mowed at all?
Damn.
Or that the lawnmower had grass clippings still fresh on it? Because...
Caitlin, that's a great question.
She was an accessory to murder. She was not mowing a lawn.
You're right. I don't know. Do you think they did? I mean, look, I doubt it, right?
I doubt it.
That requires too much thinking. That's a great call, though. We're just taking that as fact, as is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got that, and that's weird. Then the cops are doing their digging, their victimology, and this is when they learn of Greg and Jennifer.
She admitted to it, admitted to having sex in the van. So if you find my prints in there, I was in the back seat, told us where they did it, off some dirt road.
And then we find out from... Sherry's sisters, a little secret that Sherry did know about Jennifer and Greg. Now, the way that she found out, is there a sadder way to find out? Or no? I can't think of one, Kate.
There is not, no. So one of the children asked Sherry why Daddy doesn't love her anymore. And she said, Daddy loves me. And the kid said, no, Daddy loves Jennifer. And this was like a three-year-old.
She was like two or three. She said, Daddy doesn't love you. Daddy loves Jennifer. That's brutal.
And Sherry was like, got it.
Yeah. And this all went down while she is in Greece. And it was like the cops even asked around over there. They had to call her a loner. I mean, so what?
We interviewed all her coworkers and stuff from Greece. She was a loner there. She didn't do a whole lot there.
Because they were like, well, maybe she was seeing somebody over there, but she was just minding her business, doing her job, couldn't wait to come back to her family.
Yeah.
Yeah?
That was weird to call her a loner.
Right? It felt a little, I don't know.
It's like, she's in Greece. She doesn't know anybody. Even her coworkers she just met over there. She's just trying to make it through the deployment to be like, and no one liked her. It's very weird.
Yeah. It is weird.
And I don't buy it.
I do believe that even if they had been nicer about it, she was totally cool over there. I mean, I believe that she was not up to no good at all.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll bet Greg was up to no good the day he dropped her off at the airport.
Immediately. So then the police actually interview their kids.
Yeah.
Because they were eyewitnesses to some of this. They were all in the living room for their sleepover, and they were eating pizza, and they remembered that their mom went into the front yard and had a discussion with their dad.
Backyard.
Right. They remembered seeing them go outside and then never saw her come back.
She's like, hey, I'm going to go outside and talk to your dad. So she goes outside to talk to our dad, and that was the last time I ever saw her.
So one of the kids specifically said, one of the cousins said that she heard what sounded like, I assume, gunfire, two pops, and they kind of put together a scenario where she had stepped outside, got into a discussion with Greg, he shot her, and that's when, quote-unquote, she had to go to the store for milk.
Right.
Because they didn't see her after those pops.
No, they didn't. So I was curious about the fact, so did he often pull the van into the grass to work on it in the backyard? They talked about it. Look, maybe that's what he did. But I got to know if that's usual behavior, that he pulled the van on the grass to the backyard to work on it. Why wouldn't you just work on the driveway?
We didn't see any photos.
We saw their house.
We saw their house, but is it possible that the driveway kind of went into the back.
It doesn't.
And that there could have been an area behind there near a garage or a shed where you could work on something. Also, it's Florida. People be parking their cars on the grass.
Absolutely. I'm not saying it's not possible. It's just from the exterior shots of that house, I didn't see any convenience to doing this in the backyard. But you're right. I mean, people drive stuff on grass. I mean, this could be what he did. Maybe that's how he rolled.
But I think what we're getting at is that, no, he needed to bring the van back there to put her body in it.
Yes. Yes. So
do they not have neighbors that were witness to this or heard the pops?
No. There was supposedly a witness at the Winn-Dixie.
Yeah.
I'm willing to throw that out. We don't even know if that was... It's like he heard an argument in that direction. We don't know what time he heard the argument. Like,
also, there were plenty of cars in that parking lot at the time. And he thought he heard and saw, like, what did he say? He thought he heard voices of a man and a woman. Now, that very well could have been Greg and Jennifer arguing about, like, what took you so long?
Right.
Or, no, we have to push the body down so no one can see. You're not doing it right.
Yeah.
It was a man and a woman. She was in the van, but he didn't get a good look at their faces.
The cops are suspicious. The sons are suspicious. Jacob is the one that we talked to. He was like the oldest sibling, and he like was raising the kids. He was talking with his other brother, Greg, Little Greg, as he was called, an article told me, Little Gregory. That they start talking about the night and how Dad's story doesn't really make sense.
There were things that just didn't make sense. Like our mom going to the store that night to get milk. Our mom was very organized. This is the first time our cousins are ever coming over to the house.
So they've got their suspicions. The cops have their suspicions, but this baby goes cold. It goes cold for 20 years. Okay. Now, Jay Mank had a great point on Talking Dateline that, like, this happened 10 days after 9/11. So just think about the reality in Pensacola.
Yeah.
They were dealing with their worst personal thing as the U.S. was dealing with its worst national thing.
And Pensacola being a military town, I'm sure everyone was very heightened and emotional, and it was a weird time to do this.
Yeah. But you know what? Okay. Or was it the perfect time?
Boom.
Boom.
Boom shakalaka.
10 days after 9/11. Yeah?
Yeah, maybe Greg Sr. thought everyone would be a little too preoccupied to focus on this.
Especially in this military town. Like, he was probably seeing the commotion, stewing on this for 10 days, going, hey, Greg, I really just want to be with Jennifer. I know how weird that is, but I want to be with her. So I'm going to, like, I feel like he would do that math and go, like, now's the time. There's no better time than now. I mean, that's a possibility.
Instead of just getting divorced.
Of course. Of course. And as Jennifer... Well, okay. Okay. So 20 years pass, and it kept getting new detectives, and the family of Sherry was saying how every time there'd be a new detective, they'd have to start from scratch.
Which is brutal.
It reminds me of, like, when you're on hold with, like, customer service or something, and they transfer you, and you've got to retell your story when you're like, isn't it in the notes? So imagine that times like a billion.
Yes.
Is probably what the family was going through.
Absolutely. I know I would be very frustrated. I feel like I'd also be frustrated even before it changes detectives. Just the fact that you have to tell and recount your story to everybody, all the different cops, whoever shows up on the scene, the 911 dispatcher, in the interrogation room, everybody. It's like you're saying it over and over again, which I get they do that on purpose so that they can see if your story changes. But then imagine doing it like 4 more times throughout a decade or so. It's just awful.
Yeah. Or once 15 years later, because if you said one thing different, they go, that's funny, because after it happened, you said this. And I'd be like, I was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you're involved in a case, when the new detective calls, not only do you have to start over again, the way you're answering right that second could make that new detective think you're the suspect. When it's like, they did this day one. They did this day one.
Absolutely. And you know, I think about that a lot because I can't remember what I did yesterday, let alone 15 years ago or even a month ago on a certain afternoon. And I don't keep a journal. My calendar doesn't have every little thing I did. I really thought about that for the first time when I was listening to Serial And I was hearing Adnan talk about that afternoon of Hay's murder in detail. And I thought, I would be so fucked.
Yeah.
I can't remember all those little things about when I drove where and went back to where and in the span of like 2 hours. I have no idea.
Yeah. And the theory is that, well, if it's a traumatic situation, it'll be burned in. But here's a little test for you. What were you doing on 9/11? I mean, I remember what class I was in. That's it. I can't tell you if we went home early. I can't tell you. I don't remember another detail from 9/11/2001. Other, also that it's my birthday. There's that.
Oh, right. It is your birthday.
Happy birthday.
What facts do you remember, though, about that day? Like, that's a traumatic experience.
I actually do remember a lot from that day.
Oh, really?
Because I've been asked it a lot every year on the anniversary. So it's kind of kept the memory alive.
Yeah.
I remember the class I was in. I remember which phone I used to call home to get a ride. We did not leave early. Then later that day, this is the thing that really sticks out to me the most. My dad, who, a little Kateline insight, was a weirdo. He came home and picked me up and took me to an abandoned field. And we got out of the car and he sat me down in the field and talked to me about how the world was a scary and dangerous place. And as we're having this conversation, two fighter jets flew overhead, as they were doing a lot that day. Mm-hmm. Jets were scrambling all over the place. And I remember asking him, can we leave? Because it was weird as hell.
Yeah.
And then he took me home, and that was that.
Huh. You were, what's up? Were you close to the action? I mean, I wasn't seeing jets in Indiana.
That would imply that, yes, I grew up close to the action.
Well, we can't put that in there, right?
We can. It's vague enough. There was action all up and down the East Coast.
Yeah, you're right. So 20 years this goes cold. People have their suspicions. Finally, in, is it 2020 or 2022, when they feel like they're going to take what they do have and take it to trial and take Greg to trial. Now, do they wait to say, we're going to do this? Because they go to Jennifer, and Jennifer this whole time has said the same story. Even when they bring her back in 20 years later, she's like, I don't remember this or that or this. But something happens where they say, okay, we're going to take him to trial, but when we do, you'll have full immunity. Is your story different? Turns out her story was very different.
It was. Yeah.
So she gets this immunity deal. And why not? So go ahead and tell us, Caitlin, what is it that Jennifer did? Because according to her, for 20 years, she was just returning a lawnmower.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of specifically what she did say.
On the night in question, she says Greg told her to meet him at the Winn-Dixie parking lot at 7 p.m.
I pulled up next to the van. He got out of the van. He got in the car. And then we left.
Did you look in the van?
No.
Did you ask him, what did you do? What am I doing here?
No.
And she is, Jennifer, I mean, Jennifer's cocky. She's got a lazy cockiness to her, and that's because she's got that full immunity.
Oh, yeah.
But she's singing a song.
Of course she's doing an interview with AC. She doesn't give a shit. She's golden.
Yeah. And AC only mentions it once, that this was the first interview that she's given.
More than 20 years after Sherry Malerick's death, Jennifer Spohn sat down with Dateline in her first ever TV interview.
Of course, we know that 48 Hours would be saying it every 5 minutes, that it was a sclusy.
Mm-hmm.
But they give her this immunity deal. And so now Jennifer says that Greg set this whole thing up and that he said he shot her once and that he couldn't take it back and she was still kind of alive. So he shot her again, and how he had her drive him back to the house. He ran around the back and to pretend to be home. And then she waited 5 minutes and then knocked and was like, here's your lawnmower. And so that's the story that Jennifer now tells on the stand.
And it makes way more sense than Greg's version of events.
I mean, it makes more sense than Greg's. It makes more sense than Jennifer's, like, than her original story. This is one of those things where I feel like, okay, tell me another scenario where this could happen, where she ends up in the park. This version makes more sense with why she would be showing up at Greg's house 2 hours after she's missing, and why it would make sense that her wallet's still at home, but Sherry's body is at the grocery. It's because they got into a fight in the backyard, or Greg probably called her out for this purpose. Now, here's what we're not mentioning. She was shot with a 25. They found the casing for one of them. Now, the other son of Greg's, little Gregory, he was also on the stand, and he testified that he saw his dad with a metal detector exactly where the van was parked that day, looking for something. in the past.
Where was he using it in relation to where the van had been parked the night of September 21st?
The exact same spot.
What else was he doing?
I saw him digging a little.
So, of course, the prosecution says he's looking for that casing, which you won't find, because we got it right here.
Ding, ding. Those poor kids. To do this at the house when it's full of children is appalling. To do it in general is appalling.
Yeah.
But when all the kids are there,
yeah,
there's usually five, and then there were more there,
yeah,
for the sleepover. It's an insane choice.
Yeah, it is. Just because
every kid is a potential witness.
There are 10 wild cards waiting to go off while you're like, I'm going to kill my wife tonight. It's a risky maneuver.
What if one of them decides they want more soda? They walk out into the yard. Dad, can I have more soda?
They follow Mom.
Mom, why are you dead?
Yeah.
I guess some would argue that points to his innocence, that no sane person would do it with a house full of kids right there. But he did. Jennifer's an accessory, but she's got immunity. It sucks.
So what really sucks is that this goes to trial in 2022 or 2023, and this jury is deadlocked. They can't. The first one is 10 to 2.
Mm-hmm.
10 people say he's guilty, 10 people not. So this thing's a hung jury. They got to do this baby again.
That was a hard pill to swallow, because that's not something you want to go through one time, let alone two times.
So they come back and they do it all again, and they call Jennifer up. This time he's found not guilty. I mean, this wasn't like a hung jury, or this was not a deadlock. Like, he was found not guilty. Greg's innocent. He's good to go now.
Yeah.
Not guilty.
It was devastating. It just didn't seem real.
A lot of letdowns for you, for your family.
He can't be tried again. And the other person that's involved in the crime, Jennifer's already got a deal.
It's a trash outcome. For sure.
Yeah, a lot of this story reminds me of Bonnie Haim and She Never Left.
Right.
The episode where he buried her in that yard and then he finds her. But this one doesn't have the dope outcome like that one.
Yeah. Right? Also, what's the alternative theory?
Great.
What do they think actually happened?
If he's innocent, then what did happen?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know.
She drove to the Winn-Dixie without her purse.
Parked far away.
Parked really far away, even though the parking lot was probably pretty empty. And was shot and then put in the passenger seat of her own car.
Yeah.
Okay.
How's that? Oh, and her CB radio was stolen, which Jennifer testified. Okay, so Jennifer, who spent 20 years saying, oh, no, I just mowed my lawn that day.
You just happened to bring the lawnmower over to that, to this house?
There was no discussion. I just finished the mowing and took it on back.
Now she's an accessory, but then it's not the first time she gets the deal. I feel like she brings the info about the gun dumping. She brought that to the table after the ball was already rolling. Am I correct?
I don't remember.
Because Jennifer says that she was given a bag that had the CB radio in it to make it look like a robbery, and then the gun, a 25 wrapped in cloth. And she went to a river and threw it in the water.
Right.
That's what she says. Because they never found a murder weapon, right?
Right. What are the chances that it's still down there in the water?
Well, look, I mean, we've watched shows where they find it 20 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Because they go down there with a magnet. Maybe not 20 years. That's a lot of muck down there. But they said that they searched and they couldn't find it. But that doesn't mean it's not there. Because, again, it was 20 years ago. Like, who the hell knows? And also, the way they talk about this gun, again, we are not gun experts, but they're talking about a gun that's smaller than the palm of your hand. Like, so this, a 25 is like a little purse gun?
Little tiny, like a baby cricket, like Men in Black.
Oh, okay.
No, come on, man. You get a Series 4 deatomizer, I get a little midget cricket. Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm gonna break this damn thing.
Which, you know what? Which probably sound like firecracker.
Yes. Not a very loud boom.
Exactly. So maybe it's not that risky when you've got a house full of kids screaming. If you're outside in the van with your wife and you've got a little gun and you just boom. Right? Like, because you could say, well, why would you shoot him in front of kids with a shock, with like a loud bang? But if it's just a little dink, I don't know.
That's true.
I say it's doable.
Mm-hmm.
While he's outside, I hear like a firework, like a firecracker. She might have been a witness to the actual shooting of Sherry.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, here is my biggest problem with both the episode and the case. Nobody discussed the fact that not only was that van parked far away, it was parked 2 feet over the line. I mean, this wasn't a bad parking job. This was straight up using two spots almost. Like assholes do if they have like a new Beamer or like a convertible or something.
Like a man like, does.
Good call there. But my point is, it's so over the line that it wasn't someone parking to go into the store. I think it was someone parking with a dead body in there, nervously braking, and then hopping out and getting in another car and driving away.
Totally.
Right?
Yes. 100%.
Boom. Boom. Boom.
Boom.
That's what bugged me the most about it. And because, like, you can argue, it's way too flimsy that she parked far away because we don't know how busy it was. I mean, was this a weekend? I forget what day it was. I guess we could have figured that out. But I mean, it was 7 o'clock on an evening. Like, it's not like it'd be dead.
It had to be a weekend because the kids were having a sleepover. It had to be a Friday or a Saturday.
Oh, you're right. Okay, so a grocery store.
Friday.
It might be hopping.
Friday nights and Saturday nights at grocery stores are not busy.
What? I don't know. All right, but I think it's important to stress, though.
Which means that if she was really going, she could have parked much closer.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I just also, I know times where I've parked in that general area just because I don't, you know, you don't want to get a ding or whatever. Like, I feel like.
Right.
But
their van.
There are so many reasons to.
That van was not nice enough where they wanted to protect it from ding.
I mean, look, I don't know why I'm arguing against it because my theory is, I think he did it. I think that he did it, and I agree, and Jay Mank was complimentary to this guy. Like Jennifer said, he had a pretty good lawyer, like in his computer analogy, AC like that.
Like almost like what would AI say is what he really could have said in this day and age, right?
Oh, is that what Jay Mank said? I didn't listen to the talking Dateline.
He was saying how he'd never heard a defense attorney because AC's like, well, is your client guilty? And he's like, I waver on that.
Oh.
And I pushed him on it. He said, you know, I waver on that.
I've never heard that before. Another reason why I would want to hire that guy. Seems like a very honest guy. Hope I don't need to.
Don't worry. You won't need Chris Crawford.
You know who also always towed that line? The lawyers for Making a Murderer. Whenever they were asked, is Stephen Avery innocent or guilty? They would always say, we are not convinced of his guilt.
Yeah.
But they're also not convinced that he's innocent. All they know is that the evidence they have seen points to reasonable doubt.
Yeah. One thing we must discuss. Now, we can all have theories, you know, they didn't find the murder weapon. It's all circumstantial. Their biggest witness was a liar. But guess what, Caitlin? I don't think a jury would convict a guy with that hairstyle. Now, he trimmed it for the trial, but he had like, it was full white. But he was doing like a Spinal Tap. He had bangs. I mean, could you imagine that guy killing somebody? He looked like a he looked funny. Did he not look funny?
What I thought was funny was when they described early on Sherry meeting him and they acted like he was this cool local rock star. And how could you not fall for him? And I'm looking at these pictures like rock star.
Yeah.
That guy's hair.
Yeah.
He had the same haircut for like 35 years.
He's one of those guys. He's one of those guys.
He looked to me like Henry Winkler. I thought he's the Fonz when I first, and I was like looking at him. I was like, he looks like the Fonz.
And his daughter, the one who, I guess she was very young when the murder happened.
She's the one that said, Daddy doesn't love you. That's Tara.
She was. She has stood by Greg this whole time. He's been in her life this whole time, and it's become an issue within their family because the siblings are divided. And
yeah,
I think she now understands that he is probably guilty and would like.
No, she doesn't.
Really?
No, she doesn't.
Because she wants to reconcile with the siblings, even though they disagree with her.
No, she said that she's ready to talk when he is, because Jacob said that he needs to focus on himself right now. 1,000%
Tara.
She moved in with him while the trial was happening. Like, her support for him grew. Now, this, you know, it's funny, we talk about the She Never Left Bonnie Haim case, but I'll tell you what this really reminds me of is who she comes up all the goddamn time. I guess I'm just like a Nancy Howard Shore super fan. Okay.
You can't do an episode without talking about Nancy.
I know.
Because I'd been shot in the head.
I'm going to talk about the fact that a child was forced to pose for wedding photographs with the person that they think/know killed the mom that's not there.
Right. because Greg was very much still in their lives.
We saw the pictures. I mean, just like how we had to watch that f***ing prick walk his daughters down the aisle on Nancy Shore's dime.
It was very special that he was able to do that.
This guy, I mean, Jacob got married in 2015, and the only way that he could get some of his brothers and sisters to the wedding is if he invited him, because they still lived with him. So it's like, he did that just so he could have his family at his wedding, but they are still very much divided.
But even as they posed for pictures together, Jacob still believed that Greg had murdered his mother.
As we said in that one, Ashley Howard is still, I think, hands down, the most unlikable non-killer to ever appear on Dateline.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what?
I am very upset with Tara in this episode, not her personally, just that she's the baby that grew up with the killer, because she's spouting that same shit that we've seen before. Like, we saw just recently where the daughter was like, I don't even know her. That lady, I don't even know her. Don't put my mom in jail.
Didn't even call her mom. Called her Ann Cochran. She did not know who she was.
Tara. She's here talking on Dateline, like saying like, I didn't know my dad as being aggressive or abusive at all. He's always been great to me. And she said, I'm so glad the jury saw the guy that I see.
I was happy the jury saw the things that I see.
Which is exactly the bullshit that the Howard sisters were saying. We're like, you don't go home and see the dad that I see 28 days, right?
They haven't gone to jail, sat behind that glass, picked up that phone, and talked to the same man that they've been talking to for the last 28 years.
Not understanding that people can do bad things and also be nice to you.
Yes, and also understanding that, hey, it's great that you can vouch for his character, but it does not f***ing matter if you think he would do it today, because guess what? He did it 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You're right. The guy that you're talking about, yeah, he's not the one that was trying to kick your brother in the head and dragging people down the hallway by their hair.
He goes to kick me in my face and I roll out of the way to miss it, but he kicked hard enough, it put a hole through the door.
And killing moms and leaving them in the... Because also, we gotta say that Jennifer moved into that house, but not immediately. 8 years later, Jennifer, the other woman, moves in, last 3 months, has to get out of there.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was listening to the episode again today, and when AC said 8 years, I had to rewind it. I couldn't believe it.
It's like when people date for a decade and then get married and immediately divorce.
Yeah.
But living under the same roof with him was probably a lot different than dating him.
Yeah, and when AC says, why'd you move out? She said, because I lost my mind.
What happened? I lost my mind.
What do you mean you lost your mind? What does that mean? What do you mean? I don't know.
Here's the thing. Air traffic controllers are actual psychopaths. They have to be for their job. I mean, you've seen Pushing 10.
Actually, I don't think I have, Caitlin. I know the film. I've never seen Pushing 10.
Well, I know what you're watching tonight.
Okay. All right.
I'm personally going to see to it that you go down in flames.
Oh, you kiss my ass.
Repeat that control.
Negative, United. That was not to you. Not to you.
The job, now I can't say for Air Force traffic controllers. It's probably a little more chill than working at a major international commercial airport. But that is one of the most high stress, intense jobs. You have to be a certain kind of crazy to do that job. And Greg and Jennifer were both air traffic controllers.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think Sherry was too. That's how they met. Jennifer worked at the base. I don't know what she did, but I do know that. So when Sherry heard that from Tina, that Daddy loves Jennifer, she confronted him and she wanted to make it work. He was still like, she would see him getting off the elevator with her holding hands and he'd be coming home from meetings at 3 a.m. and stuff. So sad. More ammo. I get that we can't convict the guy, but I can't make an argument for he didn't do it because I don't understand any other scenario where that happens.
Yeah. Also, there's no reason for Jennifer to make up a story that he did it.
Yeah. Like, if anything, we should believe her because now that she's got the immunity, she can say whatever the f*** she wants.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the defense attorney was like, her story always changes. And I'm like, well, I don't know. She's adding details that all add up. Like, all the things that she says happened, they fit the timeline, mm-hmm. I think.
And it doesn't benefit her either way, because she was never going to be tried for the murder.
No, and we also must say that Greg got the insurance, $250,000 policy. He got that money. It's not like they had to put it in savings till the kids turn 18, okay? He just straight up got that cash. That worked for him. This all worked.
For me, he's guilty based on that hairstyle alone.
Okay, yes. And now, speaking of hairstyles, I'm so glad I remembered this. Okay, my favorite part of the episode was when Jennifer revealed mid-story. Oh, that Greg was also wearing a wig during this whole thing. Do you remember that?
So the white hair is a wig?
No. She just, as she's recounting for AC the events of that night.
Oh, right.
The conversation is, drive slowly, don't speed, just take me to the house. He had a wig on, so when he got into the car and we pulled out of Winn-Dixie and started going down the main highway, he took the wig off and he threw it out the window.
What? He had a wig on? What the f***? What? Isn't that crazy? What kind of wig? I needed to know so many other questions, right? I mean, for a guy, I mean, at this point, it wasn't white, super white hair. But it was still 2001. His hair did stand out because he's stuck in a strictly 1989 zone, I feel. Maybe 91. Maybe.
Well, right? Florida gonna Florida, Kurt.
Florida gonna Florida. And I think that's a good time to go to those lists.
Unnamed list.
What do you got?
It is Florida. It is Pensacola. I have been there.
Hell yeah.
You have? No further comment. So it's not a small town.
Okay.
Pensacola is a decent-sized place. You know, nice beach, whatever. There was a military connection, obviously.
Huge.
They
Huge.
All worked for the Air Force. And I don't recall anyone crying and saying, I'm sorry.
But this is a big one. This is huge because, yes, it's only two items on your list, but it's the two biggest ones, and they go head-to-head. So I want to know your thoughts. Is AC higher on the Dateline totem pole? Did they duke this out? Did Murph Dog give a shit? Or did he not know? And he's sitting there Friday night with his popcorn going, what the fuck? Pensacola! I know how to get there! Like, what do you think?
I know how to get there.
That's his gig!
He knows all the back roads on how to get there.
You want to know about every turn in the Everglades? Murph Dog's your guy. Okay.
I just have to think that last week was Murph, so they didn't want to do two back-to-back, maybe. But AC gets several back-to-back all the time.
AC? Yeah.
I think it's because she can handle it.
That's a good point. Oh, you know what, though? I mentioned this in the text. She did look like she was struggling a little bit, though, in the parking lot. She looked a little chilly.
So Florida's a little cold, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. At night, she wanted a pink vest or something, but she looked a little cold. But a little tidbit also, when they went... So one... She was very impressed with Jennifer that she agreed to do this interview, but also she had to drive that night from Pensacola, Florida to, I think, Illinois to work the next morning.
Hmm.
And she agreed to go out to where, like, the dump site or whatever. So AC was very appreciative. But if you'll notice in one of the scenes, there's a dog in the background. Did you see that dog that was in the back?
No.
That was a stray that they couldn't get out of the shot. So they finally just said, leave it.
Aw.
Now,
they didn't take it and adopt it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe they did.
Or take it to a
shelter. But hey, it's in the show, and I'll put a little screenshot of it.
And there was a visitor at the dock where we went to go see the bridge, and this stray dog would not leave the shot, and it just kept barking and barking.
But it's so funny that happened because I just watched a Dateline where Keith was doing a walk and talk outside of a house, and a little cat was walking behind him. Anyway, that's fun.
Cute.
Now it's time for Kurt's Kick-Ass List.
Kick-Ass List.
You know what? No. I got nothing. There was no signs of a struggle.
No one mentioned TV or Dateline.
No. Oh, actually, a little bit. It wasn't on the show, it was in Talking Dateline. But AC, first of all, Pensacola is where her husband had to go there for training. Because he's like in the Navy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I love that she had to point out the Navy flyers in the beginning.
Powdery white beaches, clear turquoise waters, and the Navy's blue angels.
She mentioned, Jay Mank was like, oh, so like, did your husband do this? And she was like, do you know the show? It's called Pensacola Wing.
Oh, Pensacola is like where the blue angels are based.
Yeah. Now, there's a TV show that was like Baywatch, like Top Gun Baywatch. Here we go. Yeah. Pensacola Wings of Gold, a TV show that was on the air for 3 years, starting in 97.
He went to flight school in Pensacola. Do you remember the show, Pensacola Wings of Gold?
Do I remember it? Of course I do. With James Brolin in his flight suit, he looked great.
And anyway, boy, was that a long walk. But the point is, AC talked about this show as if it was like Friends or Seinfeld or The Office. Like, she talked about it as if it was firsthand knowledge for everybody. And I think that's adorable because it's a show nobody remembers unless your husband was in the Blue Angels and trained at Pensacola.
Yeah.
James Brolin stars in Pensacola, Wings of Gold.
Okay. All right.
Aren't the Blue Angels basically like the Harlem Globetrotters of the military? Yes. They're not real.
That's my understanding of them too. Is that, yeah, that's a good point. That's good. Yeah, nothing else on my list. We got some other good ones. Like, for instance, it was close. It was close with the fact that there were no cameras because it was 2001. Because Jay Mank kind of talked about it on the episode about how if that had happened today, like, there'd have been Ring cams. And, I mean, that parking lot, for crying out loud.
Yeah, there'd be surveillance. Yeah, but
that didn't have one. I mean, God, did he get lucky with this crime, right? I mean, this guy, he's free as a bird.
It's a lot harder to do murder nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so next week, we've got another hour and a half, or we've got another full-on fatty. Let's find out what it's called.
I think I'm going to watch it right now.
Is that right? Maybe I party that way, we'll see.
No, you're going to watch Pushing 10.
Oh, Death at the Spa. Okay, I already have opinions on that title, because they missed a perfect one. But I'm going to let that sit till next week. I'm Kurt Money.
I'm Kateline.
I'm Lester Holt. For all of us, I'm Lester Holt. Good night.
Cocaine.